Anyway, welcome back to our ninth session of Rav Sugyos and the thought of Rav Kook. So the last couple of times we're together, we're talking about like the building blocks of Zionism. So we spoke about the importance of a Jew, the importance of Am Yisrael. We spoke about the importance of Eretz Yisrael. And now we're going to see how these ideas Rav Kook developed that we saw in the previous sessions, how they sort of coalesced together to a specific historical reality that Rav Kook was living through, which is the return of Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael in the early 20th century. And we're going to focus on his perspective of secular Zionism. What did he think of the secular Zionist movement, of secular Zionists? So we're going to see this is a, he's talking a little bit more practically. I mean, a little bit more practically. He doesn't get too practical. He never does. A little bit more practically, a little bit more concretely than the other pieces. But we're going to see a lot of the broader ideas that we've been discussing are really going to be totally manifest. And it's going to be just, his view of secular Zionism is really just an application of some of these broader ideas that are floating around. For this topic in particular, we have the advantage. Rav Kook gave a speech where he basically laid out very early on what his perspective on secular Zionism was. And that's this speech entitled Hamispeid Birushalayim, the Eulogy in Jerusalem. And this speech was given at a Herzl memorial ceremony. Just to paint the picture a little bit, Rav Kook makes Aliyah in the year 1904. He is the rabbi of Yafo and the Moshavot, of Jaffa and the surrounding areas. He is born in 1975. Sorry, 1865. So how old does that make him in 1904? 40? 39? 39, 40, somewhere around there. Really, he's not so old. I think it's a couple of weeks after he makes Aliyah to Yafo, Herzl passes away at a relatively young age. And there are memorial ceremonies happening all over the country for Herzl, as you might imagine. Most Orthodox rabbis do not participate in memorial ceremonies for Herzl. I think it's 4 days after Herzl dies, there is an official Zionist memorial ceremony in the city of Yafo. Rabbi Rav Kook decides to come, and he speaks. And in this eulogy for Herzl, when he spoke at a Herzl memorial ceremony, he does not mention Herzl's name once. He rather uses it as a platform to discuss what he thinks the historical role and the value of the secular Zionist movement that Herzl started was all about. So that's why most of the text on the page is all from source number one, Mamrei HaAriyah. Mamrei HaAriyah are a collection of essays that Rav Kook wrote that were put together by Rav Elisha Aviner. Kook published all over the place, different journals, different newspapers, and Rav Elisha Aviner, who is currently, I think, the Rosh Kol HaMalei Dumim. So he was very nice enough to put them all together in one book, put a lot of them together in one book. It's entitled The Mispeid Birushalayim. It's like 5 pages long. It's not a very long speech, but it's amazing because usually Rav Kook is super free-flowing, associative, all over the place. This is super structured. Super structured, super to the point. He knows exactly what he wants to say. He knows exactly what sources he wants to bring to build it up. There's so many references and there's so many sources. I can't imagine the average person that was there actually understood all of the sources he was alluding to, but the basic idea is extremely clear. And as we'll see why neither the secular Zionists that were there nor the Frum people that were there were necessarily pleased with what Rav Kook said, because Kedarko Bakodesh, he is going to sort of critique everybody and give his own perspective. So, have you guys gone through a Mispeid Birushalayim? Is it going to be a Chazar? Yeah, amazing, fantastic. So, I gave you excerpts of it, so I'll be filling in the rest as we go along. So, Rav Kook starts off the speech with referencing two Gemaras about Mashiach ben Yosef. There basically is only one Gemara in Shas that really only mentions Mashiach ben Yosef explicitly. It's a Gemara in Sukkah Daf Nun Gimel, and it says that there's going to be a mispeid. It's going to be Nabi in Zechariah says there's going to be a huge eulogy after somebody dies as we get closer to Mashiach. And the Gemara is Machlokes, who is the eulogy for? One opinion says it's a eulogy for the Yitzhara, whatever that's supposed to mean. The other opinion says it's a eulogy for Mashiach ben Yosef, who is going to get killed, B'Sha'arei Yerushalayim, who's going to get killed at the gates of Yerushalayim. It's going to be some type of apocalyptic battle, Mechamas Gog u'Magog. Mashiach ben Yosef gets killed. And there's going to be a huge eulogy for Mashiach ben Yosef. There's another Gemara in Megillah Daf Gimel that says that Yonasan ben Uziel translated all of Nach into Aramaic, and he translated a pasuk also in the same section there in the Navi Zechariah about this eulogy, and it says the eulogy for this figure, who's unnamed in Zechariah, is going to be like the eulogy of a bunch of words. I'm forgetting exactly what the words are. And Yonasan ben Uziel translates it, it's going to be similar to the eulogy for Achav and Yoshio. And the Gemara says when Yonasan ben Uziel translated the pasuk that way, the earth shook, and God was going to create an earthquake, and Yonatan ben Uzziel stood up and says, Hashem, you know I only did this for your kavod, I didn't do it for my own kavod, and the shaking stopped. So clearly, the eulogy of this figure, being similar to the eulogy of Achav Melech Yisrael and Yoshio Melech Yehuda, was some type of secret, which God didn't necessarily want revealed, but Yonatan ben Uzziel revealed it anyway, and when he revealed it, the earth shook. So the two questions Rav Kook starts off with are, number one, why do we need two Mashiachs? What's the role of Mashiach ben Yosef? Why did he have to get killed? And what is it about this secret, about the eulogy being compared to the eulogy of Achav and Yoshio, that the earth shook when Yonatan ben Uzziel translated the pasuk in that way? So we're not going to read through the whole thing, but let's read through parts of what I brought. So Rav Kook starts, after going through the two Gemaras, he starts off like this. V'tzarek l'havin, b'chlau. We have to understand more generally. Lama don't speak on the Shnei Mashiachim, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David? Why do we need two Messiahs, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David? For Itachlis ha-mechuvan hu shenasi echad yil, v'chulam v'david abdi nasi lehem diolam. We know Mashiach ben David is the ultimate Mashiach. We know Malchus is associated with Beis David. Why do we need Mashiach ben Yosef? So Rav Kook writes as follows. Amnam, k'shem shiyitz shiyantzar Hashem yisparak ba'adam ha-gufa ha-neshama. Just like Hashem created in the individual human body, human being, a gufa ha-neshama, the same way Hashem created in a human being a guf and a neshama, and there are kokos that are ma'amid as a guf, there are physical kokos and there are spiritual kokos. V'tachlis ha-shlemos hu, what is the shlemos of a human being? Hu shiya guf chazak v'amit emufutach, to have a strong and fully developed body, kara'ui, so you have to have a strong guf and a strong neshama, and who is supposed to lead? The neshama. The neshama can only lead in a proper direction if the guf is strong, because the neshama needs the guf to do things, to physically accomplish things in this world. So already you see assumption number one of Rav Kook, that the relationship between guf and neshama have a positive relationship with each other, not an inverse relationship, as you might see in some Musar Sfarim. For example, Rabbi Abachaye writes explicitly that the more love you have for your guf, the less love you have for your neshama. Similarly, he writes elsewhere, the more love you have for Olam Hazeh, the less the love you're going to have for Olam Haba. They're like two tsaros, two co-wives that are fighting with each other. Rav Kook explicitly, one of his pieces, references this passage from Rabbi Abachaye in Mechovos Levavos, and he sort of like moves away from it. He says that's a more of a Galuti perspective. It's not an Eretz Yisrael Dikur perspective. He says it in a much more nuanced way, but that's more or less what he says. And so that's assumption number one of Rav Kook, is that the Guf and Neshama are supposed to go together. Fantastic. Look at the third paragraph. Kein hichin b'Yisrael b'yichud shnei ila kokos. The same thing is true, not just for the individual person, but for the Jewish people as a whole. V'koach ha-makbil l'erach ha-guf ha-noshi. What is the parallel to the forces of the human body when dealing with Am Yisrael as a whole? It is those forces or those people that are interested in building up the physical, material well-being of the Jewish people. Basic safety, a good economy, a good structure of society, picking up the garbage on the right time, everything you need for a regular people to function normally, to function in a strong fashion. Shu basis hanachon, but that is the proper base, the chola tachniot hagedolot v'kedushot sheYisrael mitzuyim behem, because you need this proper structure and framework. You need a strong am from a material perspective for Am Yisrael to fulfill its more spiritual goal. V'yod am kadosh Hashem l'ka Yisrael, v'yod goyachad v'aretz l'or goyim. If any Am Yisrael wants to be a goyachad v'aretz, l'or goyim, it wants to make an impact in the world, it needs to have the framework, that's the guf, that is the Am Yisrael with living as a nation among other nations in a strong fashion, whatever goes into being a strong, successful country. In addition, then that becomes the base for the kedusha, for implanting the neshama. And then he goes on to say that look at the third line of the third paragraph. V'avdel shebineihem, the difference between these two forces, between the physical force of the nation, the chamrius of the nation, and the ruchnius of the nation, they have v'avdel shebineihem, the difference between them, shelatzad rishon, yesh dugma bin kol amei haaretz l'Yisrael. That regarding the physical, material aspects of Am Yisrael, there are parallels in every nation. Every nation wants to have safety and security. Every nation wants to have a good economy. Every nation wants to have, you know, garbage picked up on time and then trains running on time. That is something that's parallel to other nations. What's unique to Am Yisrael is the spirituality that then gets infused in that base that the chumrios, that the structure of a nation creates, and that is something that is unique to Am Yisrael. As he ends off this paragraph, Hashem is going to lead Am Yisrael in an isolated fashion. That's only true for Am Yisrael. So go back. Then he goes back to the Shvatim. Goes back to the early personalities in Am Yisrael's history. That we have two leaders in among the Shvatim, which later become the two Mashiachim, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. So Yosef, is going to say, represents the chumrius of the nation, taking care of the physical well-being of the nation of Am Yisrael. Yosef is a worldly person. Yosef is a leader of nations. He's a leader of a non-Jewish nation. Yosef takes his mashbir, machol aretz. He physically, materially gives food and cares for the welfare of the brothers when they come down to Mitzrayim. So let's read it inside, the fourth paragraph. These two forces, the Chamrios and the Ruchnios, are located in two different Shvatim. The two royal Shvatim among Am Yisrael, Ephraim and Yehuda, Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef was the supporter. Hashem sent Yosef down to Mitzrayim to be able to make sure that Am Yisrael survived during the Great Famine. He physically took care of Yaakov and Yaakov's children. Yosef was also a worldly person. Again, on the chumrius level, Am Yisrael is similar to other nations. There's a lot to speak about in terms of parallels. Yosef was a worldly person. He was cosmopolitan. He was a statesman. He knew 70 languages. He was able to stand up and work well with Paro. So that's Yosef. What is Yehuda's role in that story? According to the Medrash, at least, Yaakov sends Yehuda to Mitzrayim before the other brothers to establish a yeshiva. And the Medrash says, Vayisa Yehuda lekadsho, that while Yosef is going to physically take care of Am Yisrael's needs during the Great Famine, Yehuda is sent to set up a yeshiva to make sure that Am Yisrael is isolated from the other nations. Am Yisrael is going to be in Goshen. They're going to have their own yeshivos. They're going to have their own lifestyle. They're going to have their own culture. They're going to be taken care of by Yosef, but Yehuda is the one that focuses on the Ruchnius. Fantastic. So, of these two forces, which one is supposed to be the ultimate leader? Presumably Yehuda, because Yehuda ends up being, David ends up coming from Yehuda, and David is the one who's chosen to be the king. Shaul comes from Binyamin, which is associated with Yosef, and Shaul does do things to unite the nation. For the first time, Am Yisrael is not just a bunch of tribes, but they are a united nation. Shaul wins wars where other people, individual tribes, were unable to, but Shaul ultimately fails. It's David who comes from Yehuda who's supposed to be the leader. Rav Kook says, but David, it's not just the spiritual aspects and ignoring the physical aspects. David, we know, is a very spiritual person. David cries all the time. David is Nims Miros Yisrael. David is the one that's davening and saying Tehillim. David is the one who, according to the Gemara, is a huge Talmid Chacham. But at the same time, David is also a warrior. David also has the Chamrius. David is referred to as Admoni, which is also, the Midrash points out, is also the characteristic of Esav. So David has the physicality, he has the chumrius, he has the warriorship, he has the ability to lead, but in his heart of hearts, his ikar personality is the spirituality. And that is the ideal Jewish leader, that the focus, the core, is supposed to be what makes Am Yisrael unique, Vayisa Yudah L'Kadsho, but at the same time, you're not ignoring the kochos, the Yosef, and those other shvatim bring into the picture, you're integrating them, but the leader, the central motivating factor of everything you do has to be that kedusha, and that is David, and that's supposed to be the ideal Jewish leader.
Wouldn't then seem that like David already combined, let's say Mashiach ben Yosef and what would other people know as Mashiach ben Yehuda?
Yeah, 100%. David was the initial combination.
Why is it then? Like
and then again, it splits apart 100%. Here's where Rav Kook is going to say, is look at the paragraph v'hinei tachlitz b'chiras malchus b'David. That's where Rav Kook says this. V'hinei tachlitz b'chiras malchus b'David hayashayu b'ez kolchos nachalam ki'achad. That these two forces should be integrated. that they shouldn't not should be so to each other, they should help out each other. Then look at the next paragraph. This goes back, this gets to Dani's point. So he refers to the split as a sin, the sin of Am Yisrael. The Am Yisrael, and he doesn't go through it over here, but I assume it's also that Malchus Beis David themselves started abusing their power. I mean, you just read the story. Rechavam ben Shlomo was a weak king. He was like a young person, and he basically tells the people that he's going to tax them and beat them and make them work more than Shlomo, who was a strong king, and the people just left. So something about that was not sustainable, and the kohos were split. And then you have the northern kingdom, which is Malchus Yisrael, which has 10 shvatim, which is the majority of Am Yisrael, and they are doing better economically. They're doing better from a military perspective. Achav expands the borders tremendously. But every single one of those kings in the 10 Shvatim worshipped the Avodah Zarah. There's not a single good king in that entire line. What about the Yehuda line? What about the line of the southern kingdom, Malchus Yehuda? So you have a lot of Avodah Zarah, but you also have the Beis HaMikdash is in Malchus Yehuda, so you do have a center of spirituality, and you also have these kings that are just big tzaddikim. You have Chizkiyo, you have Yoshio, you have these people that are creating religious revivals. But Malchus Yehuda was always the weaker kingdom. It had fewer people. It was just Yehuda and Yemen. Do you guys want to turn on the AC?
I think it's very
so powerful.
And after the split, why wouldn't it be called Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben Yehuda?
Mashiach ben David? I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure why we don't focus on David as opposed to Yehuda. Maybe because it does narrow a little bit. There is a Bechira of Beis David, which narrows the choice. So Rav Kook continues that the split is represented in the two kingdoms, and that split continues all the way through the long galus. There's a different point, so it might get integrated a little bit, but the vast majority of time, these kohos are split. You have those Jews that are focused on spirituality, you have the Jews that are focused on Talmud Torah, you have Jews that are focused on what makes Am Yisrael unique, and for the most part, they aren't the people that are taking care of the Jewish people in a chumriistic way. And then you have those people, those Jews, that really care about the welfare of the Jewish people. They are trying to organize things politically. They're trying to organize things from a security perspective, or whatever it is, from a safety and security perspective. But by and large, those aren't the Talmidei Chachamim. These kohos are split. And then Rav Kook says, this split starts being accelerated on steroids once we enter the time period of Ikvas at the Mashiach, when all of the kohos of Am Yisrael and all of the leading kohos that were sublimated during Galus start bursting forth and start growing. Look at the paragraph. Cook writes, currently, 1904, in the Am Yisrael, all these kokos are being reawakened, being shaken. And just as the spiritual kokos that are currently being reawakened lead towards Mashiach ben David, that the real goal is Mashiach ben David, because really what we care about is a connection to Hashem and spirituality. But we can't have these spiritual forces. There's no base, there's no home for these spiritual forces that are currently being reawakened if we don't have the infrastructure of a country, of a nation, of a strong Am Yisrael. What spiritual forces are being reawakened in the early 20th century? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. My guess is some combination of Hasidus and some combination of the Yeshiva movements. Rav Kook doesn't elaborate. But he does point to the advent of Hasidus and the growth of Hasidus as like a reawakening of some of the spiritual kokos that lay dormant over the course of the long galus. And as we'll see, it might be also the existence of the Vilna Gaon and the Vilna Gaon's Talmidim also was an important thing for Rav Kook, as God willing, we'll see. Cain, after the hyphen, the third line of this paragraph, Cain haitz na'arud levakish chozek lu'umi chomri v'yeter makshirei chayim kaliyem he'maksharas Mashiach ben Yosef. So too, this reawakening of a desire of certain people to create a strong base for the welfare, material welfare of the Jewish people, that prepares the way for Mashiach ben Yosef. Meaning Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David are not just individual people to represent these forces that are going to accomplish these things. Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David are forces, they're kokos, they're processes. And we are at the beginning of the revelation of these forces in the world. And as Rav Kook says pretty often, then when forces, when ideas, when new things come into the world or return to the world, they often come in a very confused, very erratic, very non-misudar fashion. And therefore, look at the second to last line of this paragraph. Ukshehem mishamshin bi'eruvia. When these two kokos, the koach of pure spirituality, just wants to learn Torah all day, not do anything else, and the koach of those people that want to build a country and build a state, are mishamshin bi'eruvia, when they're all mixed together in a non-orderly fashion, mitzaras ha-galos mikotzer deos ufizur ha-kokos, because of the long tzaras of galos and kotzer deos, because people aren't wise enough to look more broadly, the upizur ha-kokos, because of the dispersion of the forces, everybody is focused on their own thing, heim chevli Mashiach. That is the part of the definition of chevli Mashiach, the pain, the birth pains of Mashiach, that all the forces are here. We have all the ingredients that are necessary, but nobody knows how to put them all together. And everybody thinks that what we have to do to bring Geula is X or Y or Z or something else. And therefore there's so much infighting because everybody has a different vision of where to go from here, because everybody's tapping into a true koach that is part of Am Yisrael that is now reawakening. And therefore it's exciting the imagination and it's taking over people's minds, but nobody knows how to integrate everything. Fantastic. The next paragraph, Rav Kook gets a little bit more contemporary. Again, he never mentions Herzl's name. Look at the next paragraph. Hinei pu'ulas Mashiach ben Yosef, shetiyah hakshara'ak ha'kolales, the activity of Mashiach ben Yosef, that he should be the general preparation, the takles hakshara'as klal anoshias, let's skip the lines in between, that it's something which is universal, meaning to have a strong nation. Mikol makom, kaven sheyesodi ikarei hamruba beichuto, shuhit yachadu tatzura protit ha'yisrilit bitgabra, eno boleitz bo kolkach, I efshar lo diskayim. Because Mashiach ben Yosef doesn't emphasize the unique character of Am Yisrael and what makes Am Yisrael special and Am Yisrael's special mission in this world, therefore Mashiach ben Yosef plays an important role, but Mashiach ben Yosef, I efshar lo diskayim, he can't continue to exist. Alkein, Asin Mashiach ben Yosef Leos Nerag. Therefore, Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be killed. He's going to wage a successful battle against the evil forces of Gog and Magog. He is going to redeem, he's going to save the city of Yerushalayim, but he is going to die at the last moment. He's going to be killed at the last moment, B'sharei Yerushalayim. Why? Because Mashiach ben Yosef plays a very important role, but it is not the ultimate goal. And as long as you have a figure like Mashiach ben Yosef that is kol kulo concentrated on strengthening the chumrius of Am Yisrael, then you're never going to be able to get to the ultimate goal of Mashiach ben Yosef, who's supposed to integrate both forces, but with an emphasis on the Kedusha. And what happens, according to Nabi Zachariah, according to the Gemara, after Mashiach ben Yosef gets killed? There's a huge eulogy. What is the eulogy all about? Rav Kook goes on to explain. Amnam, kisheyehareg, when Mashiach ben Yosef gets killed, Yakiru hakol ha'ibus. Everybody is going to recognize the distortion. Shamnam loya ador roila hakir erekshon atil litigbora tekolalet. Because people didn't recognize the from people, so to speak, the Yehuda people didn't recognize the value of what Mashiach ben Yosef was bringing to the table. Ekel kamli mena rakatov v'esatov emes lakabel, to receive the good that Mashiach ben Yosef was bringing to the table. Ule shabadzal l'tokev atzare ayon shebetudas Yisrael the mashikos ben David. Because the firm people were always fighting against the figures of Mashiach ben Yosef, the kochos of Mashiach ben Yosef. And therefore, they were never able to take a step back and appreciate what Mishael ben Yosef is bringing to the table, which was the foundation of everything, which is the return of Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, and living as a strong nation. Only after Mishael ben Yosef gets killed, that's when the Hesped happens. What is a eulogy for? Missed opportunity. We didn't realize what this person, what these forces were actually bringing to the table. And therefore, what does the death of Mashiach ben Yosef give you the opportunity to do? Take a step back, reflect, and figure out how to integrate the kochos of Mashiach ben Yosef with the kochos of Mashiach ben David. Meaning that the Mashiach ben Yosef figures, people that are interested in the chumrius of the nation, should realize why we're returning to Eretz Israel. Why do we care about Jewish nationalism? What's the ultimate goal of all this? And they should realize the ultimate goal is to bring Kedusha down into the world. And the Kedusha people should realize we can sit in our Batei Medrash and learn Torah all day, but that's not going to lead to the impact that we want. It's not going to lead to the fulfillment of the Nevuos if you just read Yeshayahu Yechezkel. You need a national framework for those things to happen. So therefore, we have to bring closer and integrate the kochos of Mashiach ben Yosef. Let's look at the last paragraph on the page. After Mashiach ben Yosef gets killed, everybody should realize MS ein kan kochos misnagdos. There are no conflicting forces. That you should be able to organize everything in a nice fashion, in a harmonious fashion, to bring about the perfect harmony between the Mashiach ben Yosef forces and the Mashiach ben David forces. Again, Herzl just died. He doesn't name the person, but he's talking about the death of Mashiach ben Yosef. Turn the page. He ends the speech with the following paragraphs. Hine, b'tzur ikva de Mashiach ben Yosef, as a ikvasa, as a harbinger of Mashiach ben Yosef, nizgala chizayon atzionot b'dorenu. The secular Zionist political movement, it was revealed in our generation. Hanotel etzad ha'kali b'yoter, that is oriented towards universal stuff, towards nationalism, which is universal. Many of them were communists. You know that there were a bunch. Eventually, the goal was to surpass, to transcend, nationalism. Mitzana chisaron aksharasel ein akokos misachadim, and because of the lack of preparation, these kokos of secular Zionist movement that is trying to build up the nation in a material perspective can't be integrated into Frumkeit. And right now is the time where we're supposed to take a step back and reflect how could we integrate these two kochos and move forward to fulfill both to actualize the Yosef forces and the Yehuda forces. And he ends off with a quotation from the Zohar. First of all, he ends off with the imagery of Navi Zechariah as per the Gemara Sanhedrin. The Mashiach is ani rochi al hachamor. Mashiach rides on a donkey. What is a chamor? So chamor is the same letters as chamrius. Mashiach rides on chamrius. Mashiach ben David requires the chamrius, requires the physicality of this world in order for Mashiach to come. And then he concludes the entire speech with a quotation from the Zohar. Let's just look at the last paragraph. Al kein amru b'zohar bereshis. The Rav Misifta Asher beichalad Mashiach Amar. The Rosh Yeshiva. This is what it says in the Zohar. The Rosh Yeshiva of the Heichal of Mashiach says as follows: Man delo hafich mirir lematika. He who cannot transform bitterness to sweetness, the chashuka l'nehora and darkness to light, lo yesehaka, should not enter this Heichal of Mashiach. Ki yisod hekshar dorish al Mashiachu. The shtamish b'kol hakochos hayoter gasos etzad atov. Because the ultimate Torah of Mashiach is the integration of all the kochos. You have to be able to transform bitterness to sweetness and darkness to light. This is obviously looking at the Frum people. And even though these people are totally secular Zionists, anti-religious, they don't want to have anything to do with the Torah or God, you have to be able to integrate what they're bringing to the table into your overall picture. Then he sat down. As you might imagine, what were the reactions to the speech? Secular Zionist people were upset, because he's basically telling them that they're a preparatory stage and they're a means towards an end, and really sort of a means towards an end, and really the Frum people should be the one leading the Zionist movements. And the Frum people were furious, because it sounds like he sort of called Herzl Mashiach ben Yosef. So he had to issue a series of letters saying that no, I didn't ever call Herzl Mashiach ben Yosef. I spoke about the secular Zionist movement that he started as the Ikvasa de Mashiach ben Yosef, as the harbinger of Mashiach ben Yosef. But no, he is talking about it. He is speaking at a Herzl memorial ceremony a couple of days after Herzl died. And he speaks about the death of Mashiach ben Yosef. The imagery is all there. But he doesn't ever actually speaks about Herzl himself.
And the
Hesped. And it's about Hesped Yerushalayim, exactly. And it is a memorial ceremony for Herzl. So that is Rav Kook's, his earliest worked out take on the secular Zionist movement. You could see a lot of Kookian ideas being run through about the importance of Am Yisrael, the importance of the integrating the physicality and the spirituality, of seeing the good in everything, the need for Am Yisrael to come together. He's applying all these ideas to the real life historical reality that he was dealing with, and trying to give a way forward for how the different kokos that were really clashing in every which way could come together. What I would like to do for the next 10 minutes or so, is there any comments or questions on that? That's the speech. So hopefully we accomplished our goal, which was to give some of the building blocks for Rav Kook's perspective on Zionism, about the importance of Am Yisrael. Each Jew is a Yachid, and Am Yisrael as a whole, the importance of Eretz Yisrael, and then how all these things were coming together in Rav Kook's own time period, where you had Jews were coming back to Eretz Yisrael, but they weren't from, and how Rav Kook sees the value in what they're doing, but it's not the ultimate value. They have to be brought back to help them behold their b'shuva eventually. But the ability to see good in everything, while not seeing the ultimate good in anything, is something that we discussed in the thought of Rav Kook before. Where did Rav Kook come from? Yehuda, Yosef, Chamrios, and spirituality, are there any antecedents? You just make all this stuff up. So there are a lot of midrashic sources, but the coolest and most direct source is the Torah of the Vilna Gaon, if you believe that the book Kol HaTorah is authentic. Are you guys familiar with the book Kol HaTorah? Great, so a little bit of background. The Vilna Gaon sent a group of Talmidim to make Aliyah in the early 1800s. Rav Hillel of Shklov was one of the few people named by the Vilna Gaon students, sorry, Vilna Gaon's children, as a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. I think in the introduction to Be'er Agra, on Shulchan Aruch, which is written by the Vilna Gaon's son, they list, I think, 11 people that they consider the Vilna Gaon students. Hillel of Shklov was one of them. He was the one that made Aliyah in the early 1800s. Fantastic. The Vilna Gaon himself tried to make Aliyah. It didn't work out. There was some type of dream, and Hashemayim told him not to, but he himself stayed, but he sent some of his Talmidim. That became the Prushim, the old Yeshiva Yashan, the old community, old Ashkenazi community in Yerushalayim. And they're there, there's Adi Omazeh. Fantastic. Around, in terms of the publication history, around a little bit more than, I guess, 100 years later, a great, 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 I don't know how many greats, but a descendant of Rav Hillel of Shklov publishes a book called Kol HaTor. And Kol HaTor Nishma Parasino is a pasuk in Shir Shirim, which the Medrash says, Kol HaTor Nishma Parasino is a Kol HaShemelech HaMashiach. And in this book, he says that these are family traditions, which Rav Hillel of Shklov sat down with the Vilna Gaon for Mir Aliyah, and the Vilna Gaon orally told Rav Hillel of Shklov the Seder HaGeula, al-pi the Kabbalah of the Vilna Gaon. And for the first time, this book is being published. And in that book, Kol HaTor, which is free online, you could check it out. One of the major themes is that this time period, from the life of the Vilna Gaon until Mashiach comes, is a time period of Mashiach ben Yosef. And the time period of Mashiach ben Yosef is about the physical return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel and the buying back and building up of the land. Just to give one piece, and it's laden with Kabbalah, with Gematrias, with all sorts of stuff. Kol HaTor Aleph Gimel. Api Rabbeinu Hagra, Kol Avodas Kibbutz Galios, all the entire work of Kibbutz Galios, Binyan Yerushalayim, Rachavas Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Lachazaras Hashchina, Kol Ikari Avoda, V'Kol Pirtei, all of this work of returning to the land of Israel and buying it back and being Markav Yerushalayim, which was a big deal in the 1800s, Ne'achazim B'Yudov Tafkidol Shemashicha Da'aschalta, Mashiach Harishon Mashiach Ben Yosef. All of these things are associated with the time period and the koach of the early of the first Mashiach, Mashiach ben Yosef. Shu'a koach anisi, shamasayel l'chol pulas hanaseis b'sarusa de latata al derach hateva, that it's supposed to be a natural coming back, b'sarusa de latata, and buying back of the land, ki Mashiach ben Yosef me'aretz, v'mashiach ben David mishamayim. And then once the aretz is readied, then Mashiach ben David will come down min Hashemayim with this spirituality. And it's all about how you have to go back to Eretz Yisrael. That's that Jews on their own have to come back during this time period, this Tkufa of Mashiach ben Yosef. They have to buy karka in the land, build it up, and that is what is going to be the harbinger of the ultimate Yemos Mashiach. And describes it's going to be an Erev Rav that is going to try to hurt you, that's going to try to bring, that's going to try to lead Am Yisrael away. What you're supposed to do is do to the Erev Rav, b'kulei b'kulei b'kulei. In the 100 years between the time when Torah Shlav made Aliyah and the book called Torah was published, we have other writings of people in this family which seem to reference some type of mystical, secretive tradition which was never written down, but it gets referenced in piyutim they wrote, in speeches they gave. In all these sorts of things, this is the work of both academics and Talmidei Agra. When this book was published in 1947 for the first time, Kol HaTorah, it created a little bit of a controversy because as some firm people noted, it seems to make out the Gra as a Zionist, as a Lumi person, as somebody that is pro nationalism, pro Am Yisrael going on their own, going back to Eretz Yisrael. And buying back the land, and that was the motivation of why the Vilna Gaon sent the students. Supposedly saying the Vilna Gaon sent the students was he wanted to live a spiritual life, he wanted to live in Eretz Yisrael. Everybody wants to live in Eretz Yisrael. Why not? This is a no. The Vilna Gaon had a clear messianic mission by sending his students to buy karka in Eretz Yisrael and build it up as much as possible. Rav Moshe Sternbach, who is Adayomas, who is the Gaivid, I'm forgetting which one is which. He's the second in command of the Eid Haredus, Adayomas. He has a very long tshuva and tshuvos van Hagos, which is a tshuva sefer. He's a nin v'nachav v'gra, as he likes writing. He says very large parts of Kol HaTorah are clearly mezuyaf. They're forgeries. The Vilna Gaon never has said such things. But even in the Haredi world, Rav Chaim Freelander, who was the Mashgiach Kapanovich, he published a madura, an edition of Kol HaTorah with his own footnotes, with his own annotations, with his own referencing resources. The academic world is a little bit split as well. There's an excellent book by this guy, Rafael Shulchat, who's a professor of Jewish philosophy at Bar Ilan, which goes through Kol HaTorah, like line by line. And his argument is basically that if it's a forgery, the guy must have known the Kabbalah of the Vilna Gaon backwards and forwards, because there are so many ideas in Kol HaTorah that are referenced in the Vilna Gaon's Perush to the Sefer Tznusa in the Zohar, or his Kabbalistic Perush, the Sefer Yonah, or all these sorts of things. If it's a forgery, the person that did the forgery really, really knew the Kabbalah of the Vilna Gaon very, very well.
What is a forgery of what?
Forgery that these ideas were never really from the Vilna Gaon, just descendants. There's some type of vague oral tradition, and 150 years after the family made Aliyah, somebody was a Zionist, and he wanted to put down the Zionistic Torah in the name of the Vilna Gaon. Then that's the meaning of a forgery over here. But either way, but it seems very, very likely that if these ideas are true, and in the religious Zionist world, this is like Torah Min HaShamayim. Like the Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook would quote Kol HaTorah all the time, because it's basically predictive. It's crazy. If you read it, it says when there's 600,000 Jews in the land of Israel, that is going to be a time of, it's Mesugal for Geula, and the Klipos are not going to be Sholeit during that time period, and something good is going to happen. It's according to the British census, there were 600,000 Jews in Israel in 1948. And there are tons and tons of interesting snippets of historical predictions, which are part of the bread and butter of the religious Zionist narrative, that Rav Kook was following the Vilna Gaon. Really, Zionism starts with the Vilna Gaon sending his Talmidim to buy land in Yerushalayim.
You said it was written in 1940?
In 1947, was the first time it was published. And after the Six Day War, of Kasher, who had him publishing out basically, he published it in a longer version with some very, very Zionist stuff. And that's when Rav Sternbach wrote his controversy against it. And then Rav Chaim Freelander, with a bunch of other Mekubalim from the Haredi world, republished it. Rav Zilberman, from the Zilberman Yeshivos, he thinks it's a Torah Min HaShamayim. He's written Pirushim on it, written books on it.
600,000 is not so predictive.
Well, that's the thing. That's part of the question. How authentic are these oral traditions? you find reference. I could send you. I think I have a share in my Torah about this. When I was holding this much more, but now I'm not. There are lots of individual lines that seem predictive about what the process is going to be. But it seems pretty clear that if this Torah is authentic, Rav Kook was just going with the flow. Rav Kook learned Kabbalah from the Leshem, who was a Talmud of a Talmud of a Talmud of a Talmud of Chaim Velazhe and of the Vilna Gaon. This is Rav Kook knew Kabbalah of the Vilna Gaon. And the fact that he has Mashiach and David, and Yosef is about the Chumrios, and David is about the spirituality, and Chumrios in this context means the building up of the land of Israel, it's hard to imagine Rav Kook didn't have these ideas floating through his brain as he was developing the speech of HaMespeh B'Yerushalayim. Isn't that my Ha'ara? This is the Ha'ara of like every religious Zionist rabbi and most academics that have touched the sugya. So that's just in source number two in terms of the antecedents, where Rav Kook was coming from. This has a long history in Kabbalah. The Vilna Gaon there writes, "Vayakir Yosef es achav v'hem lo yikiru," that the brothers don't recognize Yosef. So what does that mean? That means that the brothers, which are the firm people, are not going to recognize, not going to have the value of Yosef, of Mashiach and Yosef. And the Vilna Gaon writes that that's what's going to happen. People are going to come back to Eretz Israel to build up the land. V'hem lo yikiru, the brothers are not going to recognize the value of such people. And the Vilna Gaon also probably thought that his own neshama was a nitzos of Mashiach and Yosef. That's also explicit in the book. And therefore his own life, his own existence, basically, was the beginning of a tekufa, of the tekufa of Mashiach and Yosef. Vilna Gaon seemingly realized that he was a unique personality, and he gave him a mystical meaning to his own to his own life. This is why he wanted to make Aliyah, and he got a dream or something, a siman meshamayim, that he personally wasn't supposed to make Aliyah, but his talmidim were supposed to go. Fantastic. We don't have so much time left, but just to see like where this goes. Source number three is a first person passage from Rav Kook, which is talking about the idea of seeing good in everything, and how that idea is not just from the personal life, it's on the national life as well, and how if you believe in this Hasidic idea of the Chod Rechachateu, you can't but see value in Binyan Haaretz and the return of Am Yisrael to Eretz Israel, even just from a physical material perspective. So it's like himself working it through. Look at source number five. Source number five is one of the most famous sources from Rav Kook in Orot HaTzchiah. Maybe we'll end with this. Orot HaTzchiah is, again, Rav Kook himself published this in the after he became chief rabbi of the British Mandate of Palestine, post-World War I. He published a book, Orot. Orot HaTzchiah is part of that. And that book was put in Chirim by the Yeshuv HaYashan, by the Talmidim of the original Talmidei HaGra. That made Aliyah, in addition to some other groups. One of the pieces that were referenced in that chirim was Piskat Lamed Daled, source number five. And Rav Kook writes as follows: Hayitamut, exercise, working out. Shetzirei Yisrael oskim ba Eretz Yisrael, that the young Jewish people are dealing with in Eretz Yisrael, lachazik es gufam, to strengthen their bodies, b'shvil dios banim amit yikorak l'uma, to be strong, courageous children of the nation. He mishachleles is a koach haruchani shal tzadikim alyonim. It adapts, it advances the spiritual koach of the upper tzadikim. Ha'uskim b'yichudim shal shemus kadoshim, of the people that are dealing with the Kabbalah. V'harbo sablata se'or eloki ba'olam, in order to increase the existence of God's name in this world. V'ein gilui or echad omeid b'li chaveiro klal. You cannot have one revelation of God in this world without the other. So, again, in the context Rav Kook was living in, what two groups is he talking about? He's talking about Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld living in a Beis Medrash somewhere, a tzaddik tahar kadosh elokim, sitting in a Beis Medrash all day, learning Gemara Halacha and Kabbalah. That is one tipos. The other tipos are the mechalei Shabbos that are hitting the gym on Shabbos in order to be strong so that they could farm, they could be soldiers, they could do whatever they want. And these gyms were open on Shabbos. And we know there are turf wars about these gyms, and there are machalos about the gyms. And what is Rav Kook saying? Rav Kook comes in as a new chief rabbi of Palestine, appointed by the British government. That yeah, these two people need each other. That Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, you can't bring the Or Eloki into the world without those people that are hitting the gym. And of course, those people that are hitting the gym need Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld in order to bring the Or Eloki into the world. And Rav Kook goes on to say that yes, when new kochos come into the world, they often come into the world in a disorderly, erratic fashion. So there's going to be a lot about the lifestyle of those people that are hitting the gym that is not going to be admirable from a Jewish perspective. However, so eventually, this koach has a place in Am Yisrael, and therefore the people that represent that koach are going to be able to do tshuva and become united with the Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefelds of the world. And in the original Chirim on the book Orot, this Piska was highlighted. How could the Rav Chadash, Rav Tzair, whatever they called them, say that these Mechalei Shabbos are on the same level as Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld? But I think based on what we've seen, we at least now we have the background to understand where Rav Kook was coming from. But it comes from Kol Atar, it comes from the speech of Mishpat Yerushalayim, and it comes from everything else that we've been discussing. So that's basically it for what I wanted to say about the secular Zionism. But there's a lot more about what was going on during Rav Kook's lifetime that he interpreted in these lights. Maybe we could talk about some of that as well. But I was thinking maybe next week we could continue the story into Rav Tzvi Yehuda, into Rav Kook passes away, State of Israel doesn't yet exist, then the State of Israel is founded, 1948. How do Rav Kook's Talmidim interpret all these things? Because what we have is that we have a process of physical return, rebuilding of the structure of a nation. We have Rav Kook telling you that at the same time there is going to be a renaissance and rebirth of spirituality, and all these things are going to happen when Am Yisrael feels united in Eretz Yisrael, and eventually these groups are going to come together and they're going to create a nice harmonious Am Yisrael. What happens when the State of Israel is founded, but it's totally not the picture of Kook has? Religiosity, ruchnias, plays a minuscule part of the country's ethos at the beginning. The Frum people are pushed to the side. Religious Zionist movement is, I don't know how many people were religious Zionists, 1950, like a handful. The secular people are the ones that are saying this state has absolutely nothing to do with traditional Judaism, and they're the ones running the show. There's nothing about Medinat Yisrael being Yisod Kisei Hashem Ba'olam like we saw previously. All of Am Yisrael coming together and God's values are going to be fully integrated into this new state. So what do you do when you have the teachings of Rav Kook, which are all about how all these forces come together, the Chumrios and the Ruchnios and Hashem's values and Am Yisrael and the street clearers are going to be shouting out Hashem Achad and things like that, and the reality you're faced with is totally different than the reality that your father or your teacher describes. And God willing, we'll see what Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook does with the current reality that he was living within. And we can trace it even further, what Rav Tzvi Yehuda students do as history unfolds and as time goes on. And then maybe eventually we'll come back to Rav Kook himself to discuss some of the other angles that we've been missing. Thank you so much, and I hope everybody